Hello and happy 2017, comic book lovers. We are so excited to be back and talking about comics. We had a nice little school break. I'm glad it's over personally because I pretty much learned that I cannot be a stay-at-home mom. There was much threatened for heads to be banged together. It's like, I love my children, but can't you go somewhere else? That way I miss you when you and then I love you when you get back. So that was kind of my Christmas break, and but I think Jen's was slightly better because she only has one to deal with.
But then we also got visited by the plague.
Oh, that is
So,
true.
yeah, we've been like the plague house. Like, Papa Nurgle has been visiting us for a while. And I don't want to jinx it, knock on wood. I think maybe she's in the clear. And I think maybe we will be soon. So, yeah, I just had the one, but then, vomiting. So.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I was sick on Christmas, but it was a cold, like it was just like a really bad head cold. But no, I did not have the flu like you did, or the stomach flu like poor Susan did, and it's been wreaking havoc all over the U.S. It seems like I have one friend after another who either has the flu or their kids have the stomach flu. And one of my friends actually, they thought her son had the stomach flu, but he's been still sick and it's been 2 weeks. And so they finally did some more tests and he has pneumonia.
Oh, poor
Yeah.
thing. Yeah, we actually ended up in the emergency room, and like there was an article in the Washington Post about how like this is just going across the country and it's taking like 10 days. It's anyways, not a lot of comic writing and like a lot of reading. I did a lot of reading, but I didn't do as much writing as I would have liked to have.
Oh, I didn't get any writing done. That's why I did the what Carrie read on her vacation.
That works.
Yep, so I did my little wrap ups. But yeah, like I think the only reading I did was books. And that was like when I had like 5 minutes to myself. Which wasn't very often.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, we lost your
No,
lost your mic.
I couldn't figure out which was the on and off for a minute.
Yeah.
We're all good now.
Well, you know who else can't figure out what's on or off? And that is Batgirl.
Oh, Christ.
Okay, so, all right, so Jen is reading Batgirl, just plain old Batgirl.
I am.
And I am reading Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. And we discuss often, like what's been going on in each one of them. Because one thing that's fascinating to both of us is how, even though both comics have this star character in it, I mean, it's not called the Birds of Prey. It is called Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. And I assume Batgirl takes place in Gotham.
So I'm actually pulling side. It looks like she's just coming back to Gotham now. She was actually in Asia for the entirety of that first arc. So, and which I thought made sense, right? That she like jotted off and she's having this little adventure off in Asia, and but now she appears to be back in Gotham, or she's back in Burnside.
Okay, so, all right, so Batgirl and the Birds, Girds, Batgirl and the
Girds.
Birds of Prey takes place all in Gotham. So now I'm wondering if you said Batgirl was in Asia this whole time, is it that Batgirl and the Birds of Prey takes place after she gets back to Gotham, or is this some separate timeline shit that Dr. Manhattan's fucking with,
Oh, fuck.
or something else is going
Oh,
on?
no.
Because
I
the
never even considered that.
Well, I've been considering that thanks to our lovely friend Larry, and actually this
Damn it,
horrible,
Larry.
horrible article from Polygon that was talking about how Superman is the linchpin of a rebirth, and we're both like, no. It's kind of the Flash. He kind of fucked things up. But no, so he and I'm talking a lot of, the basically what our theory is with rebirth is that when Flash did Flashpoint, and then he tried to go back and fix it when he came back, obviously that the more you mess with time, you can never fix it. Things change, which was like the whole point of the New 52. Things have changed. Well, now with Rebirth, what we believe they're trying to say is that when Flash came back from fixing Flashpoint, Dr. Manhattan merged a couple of timelines together. Which is why we have this black Wally West, and then we have this red Wally West who remembers his time in the past that never happened because that was from a different timeline, and he's now in this timeline. So that's what our theory is. And it also explains a lot, like Wonder Woman, why she's trying to, what I read in the very beginning, that she's trying to understand her backstory because she has two different stories in her head. Like, this happened and this happened, but only one of those could have happened. So we have that, and there's the whole thing with Superman, maybe why he went kaboom, because this new Superman was coming. You know, maybe they can only be Highlander, maybe it can only be one of them. So that's what our theory is. And so now, so I've been keeping this in my head. So now, with you saying that Batgirl's in Asia, I'm starting to wonder if we got two different timelines going on,
you know,
here.
It's entirely possible. They've painted it as that she was just kind of on this little vacation that she went out there, and she's applying for some job now that she's back in Burnside. And it might explain the main topic of our podcast this evening, which is A Tale of Two Oracles.
Yes.
Because right now, something's fucky.
Well, so I started reading Batgirl and the Birds of Prey before you started reading Batgirl. I think
yes,
that
we
agreed to the same time, but I was reading it more quickly, I guess, than you were. And the whole point, reason why Batgirl got reunited with the Birds of Prey was because she found out there was someone using her Oracle name to do horrible things with mob bosses. Well, that's just not going to stand. So she brought Black Canary back to help her. They met up with the Huntress, and then it's, you know, Thelma and Louise girl road trip, and they're going to try to find out who this Oracle is. Well, not this month, but last month. I'm about to get ahead of myself. So I'm talking to Jen about this, about that they're trying to find this Oracle. And this is about 2 or 3 months ago. You said, so Batgirl's hanging out with Oracle. And I was like, whoa, what do you mean? Because they don't know who Oracle is in Batgirl and Birds of Prey. And she's like, she said who it was. It's a girl, right? Who's in the wheelchair?
Yes, I pulled her up. Her name's Frankie. She is looks to be like the same age as Babs, and she's in a wheelchair. And, you know, she's playing that Oracle role, right, where she is the end-all, be-all source of knowledge for Batgirl, and Batgirl's constantly calling on her to get stuff. And it strikes me as she's very much that Oracle role. And there's been a few panels within several issues in which they've kind of implied that she's definitely serving that function for the team as well, as in the Birds of Prey.
Mm-hmm. All right, so she tells me this, and, you know, that's fine. You know, I was just like, okay, so she didn't get in this much detail about it, but she's like, yes, we found out Oracle, and she said it was a girl. I think she said her name was Frankie. Well, then last month, it was issue number 5, we got to see who Oracle is, and, so I confirmed with her, I was like, didn't you say Oracle's a girl? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, no, this is a guy. And I show her the picture, and we can't even say that this is, you know, trans. I mean, it is definitely a cis guy. His name is Gus. Definitely not Frankie. He's not in a wheelchair. And he's a half hacker, half fanboy, like extreme fanboy, who did all this just to get their attention because he wants to be part of the club.
Right, and I get the impression that Frankie is a friend of theirs. Like, the repertoire between her and Babs is like, it establishes that there's a very long-standing relationship here. We have been friends for a while. I have relied on you for a while. She makes a joke, like Babs calls her to get information, and she makes this joke about how, I knew you weren't just on vacation. You never are. Right? It's that nice, easy back and forth. And now I'm so confused. So
yeah.
But now that you're talking about this possibly being different timelines, A, I could see DC totally doing that, and B, frighteningly makes a little bit of sense.
And yeah, now that although I guess I have to say, I kind of hope that's what it is and not that no one in DC is talking to one another.
Oh, crap. You know, neither one would surprise me.
Right.
Honestly, at this point with DC, like, you could go either way and I'd be like, oh, that makes sense.
See, or it also could be possible. It is very possible that I'm not going to get into spoiler territory with Birds of Prey, but it's also very possible that maybe Frankie comes in later. And if for those who have read Batgirl and the Birds of Prey number 6, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And sorry, got the giggles. So I mean, I guess it's possible that this could like come in, that Frankie could come in later, because I'm not sure at this point about Gus. They're not really trusting him, although can you blame him? I mean, he was using her name and was selling secrets to the mob.
Which is a really odd way to go about getting someone's attention.
Like that is downright like the weird stalker way of getting someone's attention. You know what that
Yeah,
is?
that's not cool.
Okay, that is, I can't remember his name, the guy who shot President Reagan to get Jodie Foster's attention. It's
Oh,
that type of
Hinckley!
thing. Yes, thank you. It's that type of
Yes, that's
thing.
exactly what it is. Like, dude, I just gave all this personal information to these mob bosses. Want to go out? Let's hang out.
I mean,
No!
he was basically, he was selling, because he was a hacker, he could find all this stuff, he was selling info of the smaller mobs to like the bigger mobs, or is it vice versa? I can't remember. But and then he was dealing, then he double crossed them both. So
That's
and
not cool.
no, and I mean, I have a feeling, mobs don't like that very much, and they talk. So I don't see him coming out of this entirely unscathed, which is part of the reason why I'm wondering if like he's not going to be around for very much longer. I
Right.
mean, and Batgirl, she even told me, she's like, okay, we trust you, but you're on a very short leash, for being part of the team.
Well, Babs isn't stupid. I
No, I mean,
so he hasn't.
she's very white, and I don't mean like her skin color. I mean like she's white,
Yes.
like as in like
White
she.
hat
Yes, white
for
hat.
days.
Yes, she is very, very, very white hat. But she, so the at the same time, like, so she has like no, there's no deviating from that. There is no
Right, no.
gray. There is, everything is like, no, these go to the cops. We do not kill. There are no exceptions. This is how it is, which is why she and Dick broke up this last time, because for
She's a
fuck's
member of the
sake.
Bat family.
And yeah, well, I don't know if Batman's that hardcore either. I think Batman's pretty gray.
Yeah, I guess.
Dick Grayson definitely got really gray, which kind of calls back to the whole Court of Owls arc, because he was the gray
Yeah.
son of Gotham.
Forgot about that.
Right. So it kind of, all goes in, all goes into that. But the static is. Do you
I have to.
hear?
S I do.
Oh, damn it. Good. But anyway,
I have to say that
but you're
your
right.
Oracle has so much more story than mine does. Like, mine's just a quick little, she appears on a few panels, and I mean, she seems like a really interesting character. And again, I love that it's like that Barbara has this friend who is equally as talented as she is and that she can rely on, right? And I'm so confused. But it sounds like she hasn't even shown up in the Birds of Prey, which confuses me.
I mean, I guess it's really not fair, totally fair to say that Gus has more of a backstory or more of a story, I guess, than Frankie, because these whole 6 issues have been, well, the first 5 issues were all about finding Gus in a way. So that's the reason why he probably has a little bit more story into it. But do you, like, again, like, I'm really curious now, are these different timelines, or are these going to merge at some point in time? And maybe yours took place earlier than Batgirl's and the Birds of Prey, because like, has she ever mentioned hanging out with the Birds of Prey?
I would have sworn. Let me consult Comixology here really quick. I would have sworn that yes, she does make mention of it. And I wanted to say. With you is you're like, oh shit. No, my other concern, we just kind of made that joke about how it's we're not even sure if the writers are talking to one another. And like we kind of mentioned that like kiddingly, like haha, but part of me is really concerned that what's going to happen is that the two series are just going to keep going on their divergent paths and never really mention any of that other stuff. Which, on one hand, I think we've on this very podcast and in articles, we've mentioned a few times how much we hate the constant crossovers. But on the other hand, I also would like to know that there's some cohesion between the two.
Like even Nightwing and Titans, he doesn't mention anything about the Titans ever in Nightwing. And I know that this is the same Nightwing on the same timeline. I know that for a fact because of Superman coming and talking to them. This whatever. Okay, Superman, the one that's alive, talking to them. But what I'm curious is because of what happened to the last month's Titans, they decided to pick up and move to Manhattan because when Lilith was probing Kadabra's mind, she got one word and that was Manhattan. So they're like, let's move to New York. And so they moved to Manhattan, which I'm just like, how it, is that working when Dick just moved to Bludhaven? And, like, and he even said he drained his savings account to move there because he kind of has a job, but not really because he's trying to do some soul searching and find himself. And yet, as they're filing all the paperwork in Manhattan to move their operations there, he's talking about his benefactor. And of course, like, and he's also talking to his attorney, like, as Nightwing. So Larry and I were discussing, well, who's his benefactor? Could it be Bruce Wayne? Could it be Dick Grayson? Or is it somebody else? Because, you know, he's talking to her as Nightwing. She doesn't know who he is. So it could go either way. But regardless, it also feels like kind of a mess. Right now, the only crossover, the only team versus solo that I'm seeing where they actually talk about it is Teen Titans and Flash. Because Kid Flash is part of the Teen Titans, and Barry makes several comments about how he can tell when Kid Flash is running around with the Teen Titans, and he never brings it up to him, but he can tell when he's like kind of distracted and how he's like stuffing his suit in his bag, and that when he's been gone a lot, he's been missing some school, and so like he actually sat down and talked with him as Flash, because Wally still doesn't know that a Flash is Barry. You know, about, you know, if you wanted to be with this group, that's fine. You know, you just got to take care of your own studies and stuff first. Although I guess Wally's not going to tell them the reason why he's hanging out with Teen Titans is because they're currently being hunted by the League of Shadows.
Because of course they are.
Well, you know, Damien.
Well, so I have to say really quick, the reason I laugh at every time I hear the League of Shadows now is because I watched Arrow for several seasons and I can no longer take them seriously. Anyways, continue, please.
No. But again, that's something the only like mention I've seen. Now, I do not read the one comic that has Batman and his son, Superman and his son. I guess, you know, familying it up. I don't know. I don't read that, so maybe there's some mention in that with Robin. But the way that Teen Titans Robin kind of seems now is that Batman, he doesn't feel like his father cares about his life, which I think is what a problem that Bruce has had with all of his adopted children.
Because it's probably not an invalid complaint either.
I mean, like he did miss his 13th birthday, and
As
on
one
his.
does.
Well, you know, Alfred made up for it, of course, because Alfred's just
Well, because
awesome.
Alfred's amazing.
And then Ra's al Ghul remembered his birthday and sent him a present of a dead Robin.
Thanks, Grandpa.
Yeah, and then his mother showed up begging him to return to the League of Shadows. And
His
yeah, and then he's like, no, I'm.
family life is complicated.
Yes, yeah, so he's like, no, I'm fine here. And then he finds out that I think there's like some test, some graduation test or something, where they pick some targets, and then whoever kills their target first, like, gets so many points. I don't know, you know? So, sorry, I lost my train of thought. But, shit. Oh, but he finds out that he's a target, Starfire's a target, Beast Boy's a target, Kid Flash is a target, and... who's the other guy? I don't remember. Maybe that was it. Shit, I don't remember. Oh, Raven. Raven's a target. But, you know, of course, instead of, like, you know, sending them emails or something, or going to talk to them and be like, hey, we're all targets and we should team up to fight against them. No, he kidnaps them, because...
it made sense at the time.
Right, right. But, so... but again, like, I don't know if Batman knows what's going on, if he knows that Robin has formed another Teen Titans, or...
right.
Or if Batman's trying to find Tim Drake. Like, I'm really curious, like, when Tim Drake's gonna come back. What's gonna happen with that?
That's just gonna be so awkward.
Yeah. It really will. Although, you know, Larry has been saying that the current Batman has gotten really bad. And it sounds like they're trying to bring in, like, a new Red Robin. Which, that's gonna make things awkward when Tim comes back. Oh,
like, super awkward.
Right? And, like... you know,
I got an idea. How about you just bring back fucking Tim?
Well, Tim's kind of imprisoned right now. Just,
well, yeah,
like,
but why don't
chained
you
in someone's basement?
Well, yeah, why don't you un-fucking prison him? Like, there's an idea, writers. Seriously, abandon this shit.
Maybe
since clearly you need a Red Robin.
Maybe Dr. Manhattan will free him.
Yeah, God, he's fucked.
Or Ozymandias.
No, now he's definitely fucked. I think the concern here that we, and this is something that we always have at DC, and I'm sure for our, like, tens of listeners, like,
we you love probably, all 10 of you.
We do so much. I feel as though it's important, like, I'm sure you've heard us say, like, a lot of times, we have such problems with DC's consistency, and I'm both, like, I don't want there to be one of these things where, well, surely you're reading Batgirl and Birds of Prey, right? Like, surely you are. But I also don't want it to be one of those things where they're like, what? Huh? There's another, what do you mean there's another series going on? We see nothing here. We've got on blinders. So I feel like there'd be a happy medium.
Like in the case of the two oracles.
Exactly. Or at least, like, an explanation. So I went back and I could not find that reference to the Huntress. I'm sure it's there somewhere, but, so this girl, Frankie, is running...
I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, you remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
So this girl, Frankie, runs... it sounds like she runs Babs's clean energy project.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of like the CEO, but she's also like her little helper, and they're really, really good friends. And because they mentioned, like, oh, you're my best friend, and you're the best of friends, and stuff like that. And it's... it's a cool thing. I hope it's not one of those things that, being fucking DC, eventually we're going to get to some point in this rebirth arc where there's, oh, her? I don't know what you're talking about. There was never a girl named Frankie. Like, I don't want her to get exited stage right, or have Dr. Manhattan, like, merge her timeline with somebody else's. I don't know. I guess I just, despite the fact, and because I made a joke that I'm not going to talk about Gotham Academy tonight, but, like, and I stopped reading Hellblazer because that was going nowhere in a hurry. DC's just making
it
so
hard. Oh, I didn't
know
that you stopped reading Hellblazer.
I did.
You left Constantine and Swamp Thing?
I did. Well, let's not fucking kid ourselves. I'll be picking it back up next month. But I had this dramatic, I don't care anymore moment because it's going nowhere in a hurry. Like, I feel as though they were like, oh, shit. What would Hellblazer be doing during all this time? Oh, maybe we should think about what Hellblazer would... who wants to write that comic? I guess I will. And they don't really know what they're doing with him. And it...
I want to write it.
At this point, I volunteer as tribute, DC. I feel like I could write better. I feel like my 9-year-old could write a better story.
Ouch.
Well, at least if she wrote something, things would happen. They would be nonsensical, but at least shit would be happening. Like, I'm at the point now where I would rather have nonsensical action than no action. But I think it just goes to the overall like quality control that DC clearly does have. And, you know, and so for me, this is especially pressing issue because I made the mistake that I think literally everyone warned me about doing, and that was watching the animated version of The Killing Joke, which was the birthplace of Oracle. If you've lived under a rock and haven't read The Killing Joke, that's the story, the Alan Moore story, in which the Joker shoots Babs through the spine, paralyzing her and thus creating Oracle. And that was, it was a huge thing at the time because at the time, you know, there's no continuity in comic books, and DC decided, you know what, we're going to keep that and we're going to make her, we're going to keep her be paralyzed. So, which a lot of people have argued whether or not that's a good or a bad thing. But I guess, like, just show fucking Oracle some respect. Figure out who your Oracle is and go forward with it. Stop. Whatever. I hate you, DC.
Oh, Black Canary.
As I give you money.
Black Canary called Gus the Foracle.
The Foracle. I love it. Yes, the Foracle. That is exactly what that is. Because, yeah. Hey. But I know Frankie's the Foracle, for all I know. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading the wrong thing. I just find it weird that there's no crossover or no mention of each other between the series. That's a strange thing.
Well, you know, I could go on with other things, you know, all right, so let's take Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Do we have to?
Yes. From the New 52, that consisted of Red Hood, Arsenal, and Starfire. Arsenal and Starfire were a big thing. They were
right.
They were a heavy item. So when the Titans got together, Starfire was originally part of the Titans until she realized that Dick was never going to love her again. And it's like she sees Arsenal, and it's like she has to introduce herself to him. Like she doesn't, like there's nothing. And so instead, he's talking to Donna Troy, the real Wonder Girl. Like, she's been Wonder Girl all this time. I'm like, what about Cassie Sandsmark? You know, it's just like all these.
Right.
Like, I'm just like, okay, did any of that happen? Or is Rebirth, or are they trying to say that Rebirth happened after the New 52, where Dr. Manhattan came in and squished things together, and that's why we don't know Cassie Sandsmark? That's why Starfire and Arsenal don't remember each other or never had anything? And if so, lame. I hate that as a plot device.
That's fucking lame.
Like, I've never liked, it's like, I even, like, my beloved Grayson, I said the same thing at the end of that series about when Helena, who's now Huntress, and that's a whole other thing. So Helena, she does this thing where she, because the reason why Grayson left to become a spy was because Nightwing was outed. So he had to come, right. He had to go undercover. At the end of that series, Helena kind of pushed like this button and everyone forgot who Nightwing was, except for the Bat family and her and him.
Right. So because reasons.
And then he could go back to Gotham. So he remembers her, she remembers him, and I don't understand. And Batgirl, she's part of the Bat family, so she remembers all that with him being Grayson and him being gone and him doing all this. Or wait. I say that she would remember all that he was gone as Grayson. But what if that doomsday thing that Helena hit, all it did was restore memories of who he is, not what he's been doing?
Oh. I wouldn't put it past them.
Because the reason why I wonder that is because I keep wondering, like, Batgirl, with all her detective savvy, how has she not figured out this is Helena Bertinelli, who was his boss, who held him captive, and was sleeping with him? I mean, I think that would, I don't know, bring up some issues.
Maybe a couple questions. I don't know.
Yeah. God damn it, DC. I shouldn't have to think this hard. Because it should just all be this one continuous flow. And I understand that they gotta do some reboots every now and then. I understand a reboot, but I mean like a fresh reboot. Like, this is number one. We are starting anew. All those stories happened back then. This is the new stuff. Forget everything you know. This is where we're going.
Right.
I'm fine with that. But I'm not fine with, like, let's switch some gears and then we're gonna blame it on time travel or a parallel dimension or magic.
More Flashpoint.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, it's I think we've talked about that before, that with DC, like, I wish, because, like, with the New 52, okay, they had a Flashpoint, but then they just kind of went forward with it, right? And then apparently they were like, well, that wasn't rebooty enough, so let's just do this wishy-washy, okay, we're going to take all of the things that have ever happened and just start kind of guys combining them, because Dr. Manhattan, and I just, what? I don't know, the whole Oracle thing is just pissing me off, but, bah, anyways. What have we been reading? Well, this month, I guess, or notable, because let's be honest, you may have noticed, we kind of took a little bit of a hiatus between Thanksgiving and the New Year's, because family and the plague and just all the things.
All the things, yes.
Just all the things.
Well, as I've already mentioned, like, I read Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, like, the new issue just came out yesterday, and my review of that should be going up when this podcast goes up. And it continues to be one of the best DC comics out there. I don't know if the Benson girls are sisters or cousins or what, but Shauna Benson and Julie Benson, and they bring together everything the superhero comic should be. It's funny, like, and I mean witty funny. And sometimes there's a lot of emotion and there's huge twists, like that last panel. Like, I seriously, like I took my breath away the last panel of this last issue. And, I mean, this has really been a comic where I have not seen things coming. Like, who Oracle is? I never would have seen it as this random fanboy. Never in a million years. And then what happened in the very last panel, I never would have seen that either. I can't say enough good things, and you've said you feel the same way about Batgirl.
Yeah, Batgirl has been, so I think, and I mean, I've mentioned this before, that I had this love-hate fallout relationship with Batgirl where I really, really liked it, and then I think Gail Simone just kind of lost either the drive behind her, or, and then the series just kind of went weird, and then I started picking up this one, and I was very, very tentative about this. Like, oh, sure about this one. And it's been so good. Just, like, I picked it up mostly because Raphael Albuquerque's doing the art, right? So I was like, well, I gotta have that.
Yeah.
And I love the art. But, no, it's just been good. Like, this last issue was phenomenal. It's random. It's a one-shot. I call it, like, a bridge because, you know, we had our first little arc, and then we're obviously going into a second arc, but we had this nice little bridge in between where she's leaving Asia, and she's coming back, and I say Asia because she was all over. She was, like, in Japan. She was in Korea. She was in China. She was everywhere. She was in all of Asia. So she's on an airplane coming back to Burnside, and Poison Ivy happens to be on the plane doing a Poison Ivy thing. No, not you, Kat. A Poison Ivy thing where she's, like, trying to bring back this prehistoric plant, and for some reason being at altitude, like, awakens it, and it starts taking over this airplane. And it's kind of silly, but, like,
is it like Snakes on a Plane?
Kind of, actually, except it involves, like, Ivy putting the entire ship to sleep. So that nobody knows what's going on. And Batgirl and Ivy kind of working together, because that's the type of thing that Ivy would totally do, because, you know, let's get her plant. And it's just, it's random, but, like, they know that it is. And there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek. Like, at one point, Poison Ivy, the plant, goes out into one of the wings and is trying to destroy one of the engines. And she tells Batgirl, you need to go out there and stop it. And Batgirl's like, oh, do I?
Like, oh, sorry, you sent me that panel.
Yeah, she just had, and the look on Batgirl's face is like, fuck you, no. It's just delightful. And it's this continued, they clearly knew what they were doing, which I just find great. Like, it was one of the comics that I read, and I was like, hey, yeah, this is, it's that superhero fluff that I crave.
then you would appreciate this one panel in Batgirl and the Birds of Prey from yesterday. I actually put this in my review because I cackled out loud. And it was, so this big showdown between all these mobsters and Huntress and Black Canary, they got led to the Majestic Theater, and Batgirl is sitting with Foracle, and he's like, oh my gosh, the Majestic Theater, did you know that Bruce Wayne's parents were killed out in front of that theater? And Batgirl goes, yes, I heard.
It's maybe been mentioned once or twice.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's my fluffy, my good fluffy. It scratches that itch that I want. Like sometimes, I mean, I'm reading so much heavy stuff right now, like so many really heavy series, that's the one that I know that when I pick it up, I'm like, this is going to be a bunch of rock'em sock'em stuff. Like, and it's Batgirl, and I love Barbara. She's my favorite.
Well, it's kind of like Flash over Christmas break did that. They kind of had like a Christmas issue.
Mm-hmm.
That was, it had nothing to, you know, it was, seriously, it was like a holiday special. Where Barry and Iris are going out on their very first date. And so Wally, as Kid Flash, is making sure that they don't get disturbed at all. So he's going to take care of everything before the news gets a hold of it, before Flash gets a hold of it, you know, all this stuff. So he's trying to do all this. And on the cover, it has Kid Flash fighting Tar Pit. And you see Santa running up. And Tar Pit yells, do you want some of this, Santa? And that's the cover. I was like, okay, I'm going to love this.
Right.
And he does fight Tar Pit. Tar Pit broke out of Iron Heights because his niece and nephew were being kidnapped and ransomed. And so he was actually robbing a toy store money, trying to, get the ransom to get them back. And so Kid Flash said, okay, you're going to go back to Iron Heights, and I'm going to take care of this. You just tell me where you know the drop is. And of course, like, while the other criminals are arguing about it, he runs in and saves them and drops everyone off at the police station. And there was this really sweet panel in there where the niece and nephew are visiting Tar Pit in prison, and he does a smiley face with his tar on the window.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, aww. So that was, like, it was a really feel-good thing. Chris was really funny. So at the very end, Kid Flash is like, huh, Flash never showed up. I wonder why. It's like, you want to put it together about Barry? Maybe. But yeah, so yes, I totally understand that, because every now and then you need those little light, feel good, cute little moments that may or may not really fit.
You totally do. And I especially needed it because Carrie got texts from me.
Oh.
And it's been out long enough that I feel comfortable spoiling this. It's not entirely a spoiler, because really, if you're reading if you haven't read East of West yet, by the time you get to this issue, you will not remember what I'm talking about, I promise you. And it's been out for like a month now. So East of West was on this really long hiatus so that Jonathan Hickman could do the Black Monday Murders. And of course, now that he's back to East of West, Black Monday Murders is on hiatus, and now I have conflict. Because I'm actually to the point where I'm like, okay, I really like East of West, but I really want to know where, like, Black Monday Murders is going. So, but they brought it back, and when last we saw our heroes, it was kind of a dire situation for a particular favorite of mine, Wolf. He found himself fighting the Prophet, and, like, it definitely looked like he was going to die. And in this issue, it's revealed he didn't die because he kind of tricks the Prophet into getting, like, really close to him. Then he eats him. Now, and I texted Carrie, and I was like, Carrie, none of this is going to make sense. So I just need you to smile and nod and pretend you understand my upset and my anger right now. So what happens is, because in anybody who's reading the series, you're like, oh, shit, he ate the Prophet. That means he has now eaten the Word, because the Prophet ate the Word and then became the Word, the Prophet of, anyways. So now Wolf is now the Word, and not that I ever thought, you're talking about a series that has the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse running around, and the Beast of the Apocalypse, not the Antichrist, because it's not the traditional Christian mythology beyond the Four Horsemen, but so nobody was going to walk off into the sunset holding hands in this series. I knew that, but I kind of hoped that maybe Crow and Wolf would, and the answer is now no. Because he now has to create the endless war, or the War of the Endless Nation, and I just
You could say
My
that
emotions!
you could say he wolfed down the prophets.
He did, and I hate you for making that joke. Actually, I wish I should probably, like, when I do my review of this, I should put in, like, our little texts, because I think we actually had a, no, I can do better, and then, like, you had another thing that you came back with.
Well, I think I asked you the next morning, I was like, are you eating crow? You're like, shut up!
It's so sad!
He can't eat like, was,
because he loves
like,
crow.
Like, what did I did a South Park reference as well with Wolf, is like, step...
You did.
Step one, like, step one, eat profit.
Eat the word.
Question mark.
Profit!
Profit!
Exactly, that's pretty much... So, and, like, part of me... When you said that, like, part of me went back, and I kind of was, like, because the prophet, like, he was all too happy to be like, I've eaten the word, I am now the word, the living word. So, part of me was kind of like, when Wolf was like, oh, I've become the word, I was like, well, what exactly did you think was going to happen there, Einstein, when you ate him? Like, although you would think that he would have passed it through his system by that point. Anyways, I'm now going a little too literal for this one. But, so, East of West, just...
Oh,
emotions.
So I just pulled it up. I was like,
oh God.
Because you like were sobbing about it for like five different
texts. Oh, I was so upset.
And then my text back to you was, so wolf eating profit equals profit? You're like, don't take this from me. I was like, do you feel like your hopes are eating crow? you are the worst.
It is the worst because no, it, oh God. Yes. It was so sad. And I was reading it at hockey practice while I was waiting for my daughter to take the ice, and I fucking, like, I'm sitting there in the stands like, oh, no, this is so bad, but I'm, like, trying not to be emotional because everyone, like, all these other parents are coming in like, hey, how's it going? I haven't seen you in a few days, and, you know, we always make the same stupid jokes, and, like, yeah, so I'm texting Carrie, like, so just pretend you understand what I'm talking about right now. Because, like, my husband has read East of West, and so I just spoiled it for him. I was like, oh my God, he ate the word, and now he is the word. He was like, oh, well, okay. But that's not quite the emotional reaction I was hoping for there, but...
Is there any reference to this to the first chapter of the Book of John from the Bible?
Not really.
Because the first verse reads, in the beginning was the word, and the word was God.
Kind of. The word, there is a little bit, yes. Not quite, they haven't really dwelled upon that. So the word was written by, what they have is, at a certain point in human history, all of a sudden all of these people, like, sat up one day and were like, oh my God, I'm going to write down this prophecy for how the end of the world would happen. And it's like, it is the Bible of how the world will end.
Okay.
And so... The horsemen are beholden to it a little bit, and the horsemen are just delightful in this. They've actually come through their cycle. So they
Holy
started
this. I thought I would love this.
You, I think, really would. Because the horsemen, they start out as children, and they do these truly horrific things. Like, there's this one scene where they're like, they massacre this entire town, and they're like making this symbol out of the bodies. And they're talking to this guy, and they literally stomp him to death. And it's horrific because they're kids, but they're not kids.
Right.
And so they went through some sort of cycle where they have now matured, and they're young adults, right? They're kind of like teenagers-ish, and it's still every bit as horrific. And so, yes, I think you would probably very much dig it. It's a dense read. My husband was a little shocked by that when I was like, you need to read this, I think you'll really like it. And it turned out he didn't. But that's because he doesn't really like comics in general. But when I gave it to him, like, after he read, like, three issues, he was like, holy shit, this is, like, dense. I'm like, yeah, it's Hickman, dude. So, but I just love it. It is easily one of my favorite series. It continues to be. But it's all coming up to a head, and I feel like maybe he actually does have an ending in mind. So I feel like the wolf thing was kind of like, hey, guess what? We're going to be approaching an end here eventually, which we knew was going to happen, right? But, So just tear.
All good things must come to an end.
I know. Because, but that means more Black Monday murders, so I'm good with it.
Including the Prophet.
Are you reading any series, you horrible, awful person? Oh, wait, how about that Captain America, Sam Wilson?
Oh my god.
I know you want a fangirl about Sam. Oh my god. About Sammy.
So, again, like, this is going to be a topic, I think, for our next podcast is about, not comics and politics, but comics and activism, which I guess they do kind of go hand in hand with politics and activism. And, you know, one of the reasons why I stopped reading Green Arrow is because of how heavy-handed it was with that. And yet, the last two issues of Captain America Sam Wilson have been the same way, but it's different, and he does it well. Two issues ago, Misty Knight, basically, she'd set up a mandate for him without telling him, where his brother came and was like, woohoo, we're going to Vermont to look at the fall colors. And he was like, what? We are? I can't go anywhere. And she's like, yeah, you are. Get out. He's like, but he's like, I don't know if you can handle this. I mean, can I be gone for this long? And she said, best line. She said, Sam, you know I can handle this. You can tell by every single time I kick your ass. Like, yes, there you go.
I love that.
And she ends up finding out when a friend of hers is in the hospital, this girl who is a half supervillain, like not a hero, but she goes back and forth. And Misty knew her back when she was a villain. So she's in the hospital because she tried to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a sex tape going out about her, and she swears it's not her, and no one believes her. And right. As Misty starts digging, she finds out, like, her family was just like, you're an embarrassment to us. Like, don't come home. Don't talk to us. And that's why she tried to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And this really tackles this huge issue because this does happen. And it's the same thing with people accusing girls of making up rape and all
right.
this stuff. Now, I'm not saying that girls crying wolf on rape does not happen, because it definitely does. I'm not trying to say all girls are angels, but, you know, but this kind of stuff really does happen, where girls are framed and they're not believed because people won't admit it, but it's because they are girls.
Right.
And so Misty tackles it, and she has this great quote about, you know, if people did any actual detective work, they would have seen that none of this is true. And so she tackles it on her own. Saves the day and all that. But basically it was this mob ring who was doing these fake sex tapes and making a whole lot of money. They were starting with, like, you know, villains and smaller heroes, and then they're going to work their way up. Yeah, I really would love it if they had done one of Captain Marvel's. She could have come and kicked all their asses. That would have been hysterical.
I have to say, like, when you told me about this, though, like, I loved this concept, because you have to wonder about, like, because I've always wondered about that, like, within the superhero universe. Like, you would think sleazy shit like that would happen all the time, right? Like, because we have it in our world, we have that with celebrities all the time. There's all kinds of, quote, like, there are legit sex tapes out there, but there's also the, quote unquote, this is totally Scarlett Johansson naked. And no, it's not actually.
Like, like anything you see in the National Enquirer.
Pretty much, right? So, like, but I always wondered that. I was like, well, you would think, right? Because with that cult of personality, like, you know, you. Could be that, right? So I kind of found it really funny, because, like, hey, there's a comic acknowledging that this would totally happen.
Mm-hmm. So we had that, and I liked, the reason why I really liked this part of activism was because it brought a really different approach to feminism. It wasn't Misty Knight beating her chest and saying, I am woman, hear me roar. It was Misty Knight believing a woman's story and investigating it and fighting on her behalf. Was all it was. And that's what I think women need to read this more than I think men do. And that, you know, about, you know, just we have to stand together. And I think
right.
a big problem that women have is that we can't expect the men not to tear us down when we're busy tearing down each other. That's, and I can say that across, you know, any gender, race, anything. You have it all over the place.
Right.
So, and then this last week, it wasn't about Sam Wilson again. He's back from his vacation, but it was about his new partner, Falcon, and Rage. And so Falcon is a Hispanic immigrant. I cannot remember if he's illegal or if he is illegal or not. I think he is. He was just helping illegals come across the border. And so there's this woman who is obviously supposed to be Ann Coulter, who goes to this college to speak about how, but unlike, oh, I think it says in my review that unlike Ann Coulter, she is not subtle in her all-white perspective on things. Like she basically comes out and says it that we need to get rid of all immigrants and all that. Well, Sam Wilson, his idea is to stand above it and not go down to their level. But Falcon can't do that, and Rage is very easy to come along with them because the guy's name is Rage. And so they go to try to crash this speech. And as he's going to, crash it, and he's basically crashing it with words, all of a sudden he gets hijacked by these girls who are trying to bomb the place. And they're like trying to stop him, and then they realize that they're on the same side. And so Falcon's like, hey, like, what's going on? And they're saying, well, we have to get, she's terrible. She wants this one agenda. She's not, and being inclusive to like, all races and ethnicities. And he's like, okay, I'm totally with you. She goes, and for that, she must die. He goes, okay, now we need to back up. I kind of have a problem with that. Aaron's in the best line when she starts yelling at him that he's mansplaining to her. She throws a grenade at him and says, trigger this. So I'm like, okay, I am loving all this social justice jabbing because I cannot stand social justice terminology. It's so haughty for something that's supposed to help people. So I love that we have like this side where it's like he, Falcon, is on the edge of being, this extreme. And then he sees true extremism and he realizes he needs to dial it back. And I think this is a great message about how extremism, this not Ann Coulter and these girls who are trying to kill her, these are sides of extremism that are toxic and we need to meet somewhere in the middle. And so I've just loved these last two, because I'm going to get really cheesy here, but in a way these last two issues have been what America is about, which is a little more fitting than the original Captain America, who is secretly serving the Red Skull. Details.
Details. Well, yeah, that's going to be an awkward conversation coming up.
Oh, I can't wait for it. I cannot wait for that all to be revealed. And it might get revealed soon from the stuff that's happening in Uncanny Avengers, which I need to read that from this week. Because the way it ended over Christmas holidays, holy shit. Red Skull, man. He's one evil motherfucker. Although the best part about that issue, though, was Deadpool.
Merry
Spare
Christmas!
the horns with the AK in the other hand, saying "Merry Christmas to all." Like that's going to be my Christmas card.
I think that's amazing.
But the thing is, that was all in Rogue's head that happened, because the Red Skull had taken over her mind.
Of course it did. Why the fuck not?
Well, he was trying to the whole time, but because she's so strong with her mind, because she's had to be for so many years, she's been able to resist him, and he finally got in. So the reason why Deadpool was throwing up the horns was because he had just put a bullet through Red Skull's head. And then she turns and she sees Charles Xavier in the wheelchair, and he says, did he said, I knew you wouldn't let me down. She goes, of course, Professor, I will never let you down. But Charles is dead. I was like, oh, holy shit, that was the Red Skull. He finally got in her head and messed with her.
Okay then.
Yeah, so that was the Christmas. So I can't wait to see what happens next, because before she ran off to confront him, she told Deadpool to go find Gambit and Magneto. She needed their help, and he goes like, "What? What is this now? The League of Your Ex-Boyfriends?" She's like, "Just go."
Yeah, so you have your series, which are continuing to be awesome, and most of mine are, but I'm gonna.
Oh, we haven't gotten to Superwoman yet.
Oh, yeah, good. Well then, okay, well then I'll start on my cautiously optimistic series, then, and I'll end on my one that's pissing me off. So my cautiously optimistic series is AD After Death. I picked it up because it was Scott Snyder, and Scott Snyder can do no wrong. I got really excited. I have to say, I started a new job and I work with a guy named Scott Snyder, and I was so fucking excited because I was like, oh my god. And then, no, not even. I was like, oh god damn it. Anyway.
If only.
If only. So it's called After Death. It's AD. It's Snyder's, I don't want to say first foray into long form comic writing, but definitely his deepest dive. And it is about a world in the future where we have cured death. Mm. And it starts, actually, the main character is really close to our age, because I think he's like 9 or 10 in 1986.
Okay.
And it bounces between, it's very much stream of consciousness, where he talks about like, hey, you know, I remember these stories from my childhood, and these probably affected me somehow, and how I went on to cure death. And it's taking place in the world after like 500 years after they've cured death, right? So people are going off and doing jobs, like just all the jobs, right? Like, he was working as a farmer for a while, because why wouldn't you if you're immortal, right? You would just do everything.
God, I would think being immortal would be so boring.
Yeah, it sounds like it really, it, like, I have agreed with you. But like, this really kind of paints it as it's very, okay, well, I guess now I'm just gonna go spend another 100 years doing something else. And so, it's an interesting series, but like, so another one of Snyder's series, two of his actually, he had The Wake, which grabbed me instantly, and Witches, which grabbed me instantly. This one's more of a slow burn. Like, I'm definitely on the, oh, it's good. It's not great yet, but it's good. It's good. I'm a little torn on it. So I'm thinking it's going to be very good, but it's definitely more of a slow burn. And part of that is because it is long form. So there are several pages of nothing but exposition, right? They'll have like an illustration on it, but not like a traditional comic style. And it's definitely, I think there's a lot more writers pushing this and trying to test where the limits are and where people will and will, or what they will and won't accept. And that, so it's interesting. It's definitely a good thought project. Check back with me. I'm not bending over backwards singing its praises yet. But I have faith in Snyder. In Snyder we trust. Not as much as Hickman, but yes.
You're going to make that a shirt, in Snyder we trust?
Oh god, I totally should.
So I'll talk about Superwoman. Which, like, this is really a comic that makes me feel dumb. That I can't figure it out. That I don't really understand exactly what is going on. I mentioned this in my review, that I've reread the issues, like, consecutively, like, a couple of times now. And I'm just like, no, I'm just dumb. I can't follow along with what's going on. So, with this last issue, I decided, you know what? Okay, I just have to ignore, just admit it. I don't understand what's going on with Lana and how she suddenly became Ultra Woman and how she got to that, and how Tracy 13 comes through time and is like, oh my gosh, she's going to take over. And then they go outside and she already has. It's very, very strange. And so if I just ignore that part of it, just accept, okay, you know what, I kind of do like what a lot of Japanese anime, you don't ask, you just accept this is where it is,
just go with it,
and you know, roll on. And so once I did that, I started to really kind of follow through with it. But it's now begging the question of, is Lois Lane actually still alive? Because for several issues now, Lois, I mean, seriously, be creative. So Lana Luthor, come on.
Oh my god.
Lana has been, like, seeing a vision of Lois talking to her, which is not too unusual. You know, I think it would be normal after witnessing someone's death to, you know, believe that you're seeing them. And she's holding those conversations with her, which you'd think would be a figment of her imagination. But I don't know if your figment imagination would argue with you the way that Lois does. I just kind of rolled with it. Well, So Ultra Woman, she has these, all right, so she has these Bizarro women that were made from the Bizarro gene, and one of them is kind of turned against her and was going, and she was helping Lana, and then she asked Lana if Lois needed help too, and so at that point Lana's like, you can see her? And the thing is, Lois is not that surprised that this woman can see her. Which also makes me, go back to think about Lois's last words, which was, "Oh, Clark, I finally understand." Just as she, burned up and then became to dust. So I'm
Oh,
wondering
right, yeah.
if there's some transcendental thing going on. Again, is this Dr. Manhattan at work, merging the timeline since the other Clark and Lois and their son Jonathan are now here? Right, it's very interesting, and I have a feeling that this series is about to come to an end, mainly because they said, coming next, Superwoman's Last Stand. That pretty sounds pretty final to me. She's had to find Lex Luthor because Lana trapped him underground, and so she actually had to go save Lex, which about killed her. Because she hates him so much, and so she's like finally asking, like, "Why does your sister hate you?" He's like, "I don't know. I loved her, did everything for her." She's like, "Well, I want to hear your side of the story." And then he tells it. It's like, okay, you are really the worst human being on the planet. No wonder she hates you so much. So I guess somehow they're going to team up, and with this Bizarro woman, they're all gonna, and maybe this will all get sorted out with what is happening, why. Why can she see Lois? What's going on with Lana's powers? Because she's actually burning up as well. She's dying, just like how Lois did. So it's been, and it's like I read every issue going, okay, I feel dumb. Like I don't fully understand it, and it makes me feel like so dumb. And I'm sure there's someone out there going, oh, but it's, well, actually, it is so simple. It's just this, and this. And which makes me wonder, did I miss something? Was something referenced in one of the action comics, or one of the other Superman comics? Or was this maybe something part of this mentioned in the New 52 action comics, where this would all kind of make sense and it all roll in? It doesn't to me. I think that's part of the problem when you don't have that kind of continuity going across, and then they start a brand new series, which of course they can do, but then start explaining and don't assume that you already know everything from the past. Because even
Or
like,
that you're gonna go and, dig through 300 comics to try to figure out.
oh, that's probably underestimating the
Oh,
number.
easily. Probably easily. But, like, I mean, you're not gonna go and dig through all these comics to try and figure out, okay, where is this explained?
Right, like, yeah. So, I mean, I'm gonna stick with it because, like, I mean, I like the premise of it, and I'm hoping that they explain it. And I really do like the idea of, Lois and Lana being superwomen, kind of after Clark, or their Clark, not this current Clark. So, I mean, I kind of like the idea. I'm just, I don't know. Like, I really love, like, about the first two or three issues, and then it went DC on me.
Oh, you knew that was lurking off there in the corner somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's why I had day drink.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Superwoman.
No, just
Well, all of
DC.
DC. All of DC in general, but it'll be Superwoman today. I'm about to join you in day drinking, though, with The Wicked and the Divine. This is a series that I've kind of had a love-hate relationship with. When it's good, it's so good. When it's bad, it's kind of like I made a joke forever ago that it generally is in danger of disappearing up its own asshole. But
Yeah,
then
you
it'll be
said
like,
that.
but then every now and then, just as it's about to get there, it'll suddenly be like, oh, by the way, this really interesting thing, and you'll be like, oh, I'm stuck back in. So the series, I loved the series and it had such a great momentum up until the point at which Persephone killed Ananke. And now the gods are tetherless, right? And Ananke spoke of this great coming darkness and all these things that they needed to do, right? And everybody was kind of like, no, whatever, we don't know if that was true or not. And this issue kind of answers that question, but I think I don't feel confident that Kieran Gillen knows where he's going with this.
Hmm.
And I know that I had read
that's a safe feeling.
It was an interview with what's his name? Song of Ice and Fire. George R. R. Martin.
Oh.
He talked about how characters kind of take on a life of their own. Like, you might have this idea of, well, I want this to happen, but then, like, the story just kind of starts going down this road that you didn't intend. And I think that's kind of what happened with The Wicked and Divine. And I kind of feel like now he's written himself into a corner. And my biggest complaint with it that's really disappointing was that initially, so you had this character, Lara, who was our fish out of the water, right? She was the outsider. She wasn't a god. She was a fangirl of the gods. She wanted to be one. And so we kind of followed this arc of her just being this really nice person, and she really just wanted everyone to get along and be happy because gods are amazing. And then she became a god, and Anke realized that, oh, actually, you are Persephone, I'm sorry, and killed her. And so you see this rebirth in Lara. She goes from being this really nice, happy person, and then Lara kind of disappears, and this Persephone, this destroyer, comes in. Persephone's not very likable. And I don't mean that, like, she's a villain. You don't like villains, because I like a lot of villains, okay?
Well,
like,
probably,
I like villains.
She probably has issues after being forced to marry Hades and all that.
Right. Unfortunately, I didn't even deal with any of that right now. She's currently with Baal. And,
well, okay, whatever.
Right. She's just not a likable character. Like, every issue boils down to her threatening to kill someone and everybody having to talk her down off that ledge. Like, the last three issues have been Persephone being like, all right, I'm going to fucking kill someone. I'm making the snap gesture because that's what they do. They snap and people's heads explode. So she does is like, I'm going to kill somebody. And, whoa, calm your shit. Let's not kill someone. Okay, I'm not going to, but I might. And then the next issue, it's, I'm going to kill this person. Whoa, hey, calm down, calm down. Okay, but I might. Like, it's really formulaic, and she's not very interesting anymore. Now, he does drop quite the... It came out last week, so I guess I can talk about it now, because it did come out last week. The darkness has reared its head. Mm. And I have no idea what that means, what it's going to mean, because it's literally the last panel. So it's possible that things get really interesting, and, like, that people need to figure their shit out, but I'm not really instilled with that much hope right now. So it's really disappointing because I went from being like, oh my god, this series, to maybe? Yeah. So, like, this last issue was the first. So they had an issue right after Christmas where they were like, or excuse me, right after their hiatus, which was, I think I mentioned it was long form magazine style and I didn't really like it that much. And I was kind of like, And then the next issue, I was kind of like, okay, all right. And this issue came out, and I was like, I don't really care that much. So we'll see. Maybe it'll pick up, but right now it's on my shit list. God damn it.
It and Superwoman need to sit in the corner.
That's right. Go think about what you did.
Yep.
Come out with a smile on your face.
Yeah.
It
makes sense.
I don't know.
God damn it.
Makes sense, for fuck's sake. Although, so, okay. Your last one on your list are too many X-Men.
Okay, so.
I'm reading a few X-Men.
All right.
Are they making sense?
Okay, so, go on ahead and get your judgment glasses on. And go on ahead and get prepared to be ashamed of me.
What the hell am I talking about? I got a judgment hat.
No, yeah. Just get your judgment pants on. Just get it all out. Your whole three-piece suit. Just get it on.
Oh, I gotta find the tie.
Your fedora. Just snap it into place. So, one series I have been reading off and on. I still subscribe to it, but I haven't been reading regularly. It was the all new X-Men. And so, to explain the all new X-Men, this is. Okay, you're going to go Demon Banker on me. This is...
Oh, Jesus.
Scott Summers, Warren Worthington, Hank McCoy, Jean Grey, and Bobby. They've... Like, the original five X-Men, when they're teenagers, have come to the future. And...
Okay. No, I'm going to go with it.
Okay. And they see what horrible things have happened And so Scott is now in the future. Teenage Scott is now in the future, and he sees that his future self has gone on a rampage and murdered thousands of people. Millions of people, actually. And he's eventually killed. So Scott's feeling a little, okay, this is not so good. So he's a little more broody than usual. And the problem is Beast can't figure out a way to get them back to their time. So they're kind of trapped here. And in the meantime, somehow, like, in the last series of All New X-Men, I missed a lot because Angel lost his feathery wings and now has sentient wings of fire.
Wait, what? Oh, you know what? Okay, I'm going to go with it.
Okay, and also joining part of the All New X-Men is the Wolverine clone, X-23.
Oh, yeah, his clone, not daughter.
Yeah, it's a clone.
His femme clone.
She's kind of funny, though. She really needed some energy to burn, so she's going on these missions to take down people, and she's like up in the tree, she's like, what would Wolverine do? And she jumped down, spun, and she goes, something, 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 bub. I'm like, okay, that's kind of funny.
That's at least good. Okay.
So anyway, in reading this, like, I've been wondering, like, where's Jean Grey? Because she's not part of them. Not that I love her.
Said no one ever. Where's Jean?
I'm just curious where she went. And they made references that she's at a university, and she broke up with Scott and Beast. I'm like, wait, what?
What?
Yeah. And okay. She's in love with a 400-year-old man. So I got curious.
Oh, okay.
Of what was going on. So I bought volume one of The Extraordinary X-Men.
Oh my God.
And The Extraordinary X-Men consists of, like, the remnants of Xavier's students that are trying to help mutants escape the Terrigen clouds that are just coming through and killing them.
Goddamn Terrigen clouds.
So this consists of Storm, because she has taken over for Professor X since Scott went murdery. So it's her. It's Iceman. Present day Iceman, not past Iceman. Funny thing is that past young Iceman has come out as gay. Present Iceman is not. Let's just roll with this.
Okay, yeah, I'm just gonna keep going.
Yep. And Nightcrawler. Jean Grey. She decided she couldn't stand being around with the boys' club, and she's went to go find Professor School and found out what was going on and decided to just go ahead and stay. And, look who's here. Old Man Logan.
Oh,
who has come from the future. In a timeline where he's not dead.
Oh, for God's sake, why not?
Right. And he's amazed to see her because, you know, she's been dead. Well, the two of them, like, really, really bond over this.
Oh, for God's sake.
And now...
Why?
And now they're a couple, which is really super creepy, because he's... This makes sense now why they're saying, you know, the 400-year-old man. He's maybe that old. And he definitely looks like her grandfather. And she is, 18?
Nice. Going Twilight. They went full Twilight.
Oh, damn, you're right.
They never go full Twilight.
So, the reason why you're going to be ashamed of me is because this version of Logan is likable.
There's no such thing.
No, it's true.
Oh, for goodness sake.
He's...
You have better standards than that, darling.
This one's actually funny. You know why he's likable and funny? Because he's a grizzled old man. And he doesn't give a fuck anymore. Not that he ever really did, but he really doesn't.
Yeah, I imagine now that he's, like, aging and shit, he's like, nope, not even a single one.
Oh, it's really funny, because he's having a conversation with Jean. I'm like, okay, you know what, fine, get them together, get it out of their system, whatever, I don't care anymore, they deserve each other. So she's talking to him, and he makes some comment about, you know, I'm glad that, you know, that you can't end up with Slim, that was his nickname for Scott Summers.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, oh, did you know that teenage Scott is here too? And he goes, oh, great. Like, but I think they're going to keep them fairly separate because these younger X-Men want nothing to do with Storm and all that. They kind of want to do their own thing. And I really like them because Scott is not an emo asshole like how he was in the very original 1960s X-Men. He's actually playing pranks on people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's not really the leader. Beast is more the leader.
Right.
Yeah, so it's different. And I'm thinking about subscribing to Extraordinary X-Men because I have a problem. Which would mean I'm now officially, I'd be officially reading all the X-Men's.
Oh my goodness.
Because I'd be reading all new X-Men, Extraordinary X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, and Uncanny Avengers.
Holy shit, woman.
All the X-Men.
Well, you know what?
All the X-Men.
I can't, like, I can kind of jokingly, like, judge you, but I totally, like, can't legitimately judge you at all. At all.
Why?
So,
I'm surprised to hear this.
Well, no, because I just, like, everybody likes that thing, right? Like, everybody has that thing they still cling to. And so, yeah, no, I can't. I watched Arrow for 4 fucking seasons. I can't say shit. I can't say shit to anybody about anything.
So, I was at a yoga training this last weekend, and I was wearing my Commander Shepard leggings, which are pretty damn awesome. And they were like, oh my gosh, I love your leggings. It looks like you're wearing, like, a biomechanical. Like, your biomechanical is, like, actually, it's armor. And I was showing, like, where the hinges were, like, in the hip sockets and everything. And they're like, is that from something? And I said, yes, it is. And they're like, man, how much of a nerd are you? And I unzipped my hoodie and was like, I don't know, how much am I? And it was my new Marvel Collector Corps shirt, which was Xavier School for the Gifted, established 1963. And they're like, oh my gosh, X-Men. Like, oh, I love the X-Men. Like, Wolverine's just the best. And I was like, oh. So I'm there schooling them on X-Men and telling them that Wolverine is dead. And they're all heartbreaking because they love Hugh Jackman and don't know anything about the comics.
Right.
So during the lunch break, I just kind of wanted some time to myself. So that's when I sat and read The Extraordinary X-Men. When I was finished, I went up to one of my instructors, who was a big, like, she loved the comics, like, in the 90s. I went to her, I was like, Adriana, I just read, like, the new X-Men stuff, and there's Old Man Logan in it. She goes, oh, do you hate it? I'm like, he's likable. And she just went, there. Like, it's going to be okay.
We're going to get through this together.
Like, I feel like I just betrayed myself. Like, how can I like this asshole? She's like, it's going to be okay. I'm like, is it?
Really?
I feel like I don't even know me anymore.
Who am I? Yeah, no, I mean, hey, cool, right? Like, Sabretooth's a good guy now. Old Man Logan.
God, this is true, right? I mean,
it's fucking bizarro
now. Who would have thought I love Sabretooth?
Wait, do you understand what Clark was talking about now? We have entered bizarro world. Just like Superwoman.
So that's what Lois was referencing?
It's exactly what she was like, oh, son of a bitch, Old Man Logan is actually like, God damn it, Marvel's killing it. I'm not even reading any Marvel series. God, I'm not even reading any of them, and I just...
Man.
Yeah, they're doing better.
Marvel is doing better. I am enjoying so much Marvel. Of course, yes, I did unsubscribe from the Mighty Thor, and that's because it became a Thor comic.
Right.
It just wasn't as interesting to me anymore, and that's just me. It's nothing that the comic was bad, it's just I never enjoyed Thor.
Right.
And now it's become Thor, and that's fine. I'm sure fans of Thor wanted that, but I'm like, okay, no, I really enjoyed it when she first became it. It was a big mystery, and everyone's trying to figure out who she is, but now I'm just kind of over it, and it's time to move on. I think it's cool that she is Thor. I'm going to be really curious to find out what happens when the cancer does finally kill her, because one thing that does go on is that, you know, because Jane Foster has cancer, she is dying. Whenever she does her chemo, because, you know, chemo is literally poison in your body, when she takes up the hammer, it immediately eradicates all the toxins, which includes the chemo. So every single time she picks up the hammer, it removes all of her treatment. So she's, it's eventually killing her.
It removes all of the toxins, so the hammer's an antioxidant.
Don't make this worse than it is.
Sorry, I had to.
Which makes me wonder if, like, if that's true, then it sounds like the hammer is a healing thing. So when she was shot, why did the hammer have to become sentient and, like, become her and surgically remove the... Okay, you know what? I just need to...
No, don't even go down that hole. Don't even. You will not be happy what you find there.
No.
At all.
No. I already just admitted that I'm liking too much X-Men. Something I swore I would be done with, like, years ago. Just goes to say, never say never.
Indeed not.
I might even get Jen back into it.
No, hell no. No, I tried.
She
I tried.
Says that, but Colin Bunn writes Uncanny X-Men.
I know. God, I love him so much.
And it's so good.
But I did try it, and I'll wait. When it goes on sale again, I will definitely buy more of it, but it needs to be on sale. I didn't like it enough to pay full price. Mostly because I've never liked... It's Monet, isn't it? Yeah, it's Monet. I have never liked her at all, and she's front and center in the series.
She is. I was there because of Psylocke and the Archangel Husk. And now that Psylocke is gone, I don't know entirely what to do with it anymore, especially now that we're going into this whole new... Speaking of crossovers, this huge crossover arc that's going across the Avengers, the Inhumans, all new Inhumans, all new X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, Uncanny Avengers. Just anything that has to do with the X-Men or Avengers, X-Men or Inhumans. It's this huge crossover arc called the Inhumans versus X-Men. And it even has its own... It's like its own civil war. So there's even their own issues called the Inhumans versus X-Men. So that's what's going on. And I don't know how Psylocke's going to fit into that. I'm assuming Magneto's just going to, like, kill everything. Because that's just kind of what he does. Now that his moral compass of Psylocke is no longer there. And Monet is going batshit crazy. I mean, more crazier than she was.
Right. Important and very important.
Yeah. So
qualifier.
Yeah, so I mean, I have the issues that came this week. I need to read it, read that in Uncanny Avengers. But yeah, I mean, I am back into Marvel. I mean, I'm reading more DC than I am Marvel, but it's the Marvel that has been so good. And like I can tell you of two or three of the DC comics I'm reading that are really really good. And but pretty much now that I've called out Mighty Thor, all the Marvel I'm reading is really really good, which is kind of amazing.
Which is great. I mean,
yeah,
it is good. I think for the most part, like, and people have probably noticed that we call it our podcast Yelling About Comics, and we complain about a lot of the series we read, but by and large, like, we're kind of culling down to the stuff that we really like. Like, I'm going to continue to read Gotham Academy because my daughter likes to read it, and I don't let her read any comics that I haven't pre-screened.
Makes sense.
But like, it in that series is such a fucking train wreck. But in large, I feel like we're kind of starting to, you know, cut the garbage from our lives.
Well, we are doing that. And I, you know, and since I started two new columns this week, you know, Monday Marvel Mimosas and DC Day Drinking, it does sound like it's really silly that I'm going to sit here and say, oh, I drink all the time because of these comics and I'm just going to bitch about it. I don't want that really what it be. It's more of a tongue-in-cheek thing of, yes, like, the stuff is silly. Yes, it frustrates me, but there's still these things that are really, really good behind it. Yes, I'm going to keep reading it because I do, as much, even if I complain about it, I really do enjoy it. And again, it's like, I think we've coined a new phrase. It's demon bankers. Like, it sounds ridiculous, and yet it's still underneath. It's so good.
I love that that's our phrase.
It is a phrase.
It's true. It's demon bankers. Which, if you have no idea what that means, check out last month's podcast, or it's a totally reference to Black Monday Murders.
Yeah. So that's really what I now, like, when I start telling Sean some of this stuff, I'm like, okay, so I'm about to go like demon bankers on you. He goes, all right, what crazy stuff is it now? I'm just like, yeah. So the, because really, when you throw in demon bankers and expect that to be serious, you really have to suspend some belief a little bit.
Take a little bit of a grain of salt mm-hmm. with what we're coming with here. Yep. No, I hear it.
You know, it's almost like Japanese anime, that's redundant. It's almost like anime.
Right.
It's super ridiculous on the surface, but when you watch it and you're sitting there, like, you know, wiping your eyes and crying because it's something right. that's really, really good underneath it. So, anyway, that's all I really wanted to say because I don't want people to think that we're just basically, like, bitching about comics because...
It happens occasionally.
It does happen, but And I know you don't want it to be this way either, because there's so much negativity in the world. I don't want to contribute to that. And comics are supposed to be entertainment and fun.
They are, yes. And I think by and large, and that's what I was saying, that like by and large, I think we've done a good job of, you know, we picked up some stuff to give it a shot. And I have, my Comixology account is a little scary, because I have picked up so much shit over the years just to be like, hey, maybe this will be good. And no, this is not good. And I feel like for a while there, I had all these series, and I was like, oh my god, some of these really suck. And now, I'm like, okay, good. I'm in a good spot right now. So I'm proud, and I'm pleased with myself. And I'm sure, like, by this time in, like, 3 or 4 months, I'll be like, okay, god, I've got to cut some of these series that I've picked up.
Yeah, I was so happy I've done that a couple, and then I picked up two more. I'm like, damn it, that's... one step forward and two steps back, but I guess, you know, that's still, like, just one step back, technically, if you do the math. Okay, anyway, I should stop talking numbers.
Anyways, yeah. We're talking math. It must be time to wrap up.
Yes, it is. So thank you guys for listening. We're very excited to be kicking off 2017 this way. Jen and I are both very excited about comics in general, about this website, and about this podcast, so we are not going anywhere. We will be back in 2 weeks. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and on Google Play. I will put both of those links at the end of this post. Of course, you can also listen to the podcast directly on our website, which is yellingaboutcomics.com. You can follow us on Twitter at yellaboutcomics. Jen is at Jen Bozier, and I am at Crunchy Chocobo. And we now have a Facebook page. You can search for Yelling About Comics on Facebook, and any of our posts and podcast links will be put there as well. If there's any suggestions that you have for us, comic suggestions, stuff for the podcast to talk about, please put a comment on the post. And if you do like us, give us a review on Google Play or iTunes. We'd like to know how we're doing, how we can make things better. And yes, I know we need intro and outro music. I'm actually working on that.
So yay!
I am. I have some people I'm going to talk to. So anyway, so this is Carrie and Jen, and we're going to say sayonara for the night, and we'll talk to you in two weeks.
Fare thee well.